Welcome to On Being Happier, Thinking with Heart and Mind, a podcast emphasizing the heart's role in happiness, in sound decision-making, and in being at our best. Hi, my name is Ron Schneebaum. I'm a physician, work at the outpatient arm of the Children's Hospital at Dartmouth, and serve on the clinical faculty at Dartmouth College's Geisel School of Medicine. I'm convinced that nothing's more important to the human psyche than love. I've worked at thinking with both heart and mind for over 40 years. While intellectual analysis generally carries the banner of thinker, to leave out the heart is to leave out something vital. Language reminds us of the importance of the heart. To do something half-heartedly or to not put our hearts into an activity means we didn't do it well. And to be heartless is not a compliment. We involve our hearts wherever we care the most, where heart and mind work together, we're happier, have richer relationships, and greater practical success. We are fully present and we are fully ourselves. It's the art of living well. Each episode of this podcast presents a different aspect of thinking with heart and mind. Together, I hope they paint a full and broad picture. I developed this podcast to not only describe a lost art, but to also offer challenges and tools that interested listeners can use to incorporate thinking with the heart and mind into all aspects of their lives. The ideas in this podcast are my own, and the stories have been altered to protect privacy. This podcast is not a substitute for medical advice. If you are experiencing significant difficulties, please seek professional help. I thank you for joining me on this venture. My very best and be well, Ron. Episode 21, Thinking Through Relationships with Heart and Mind, Part 2 of 3. When I go to see newborns in the nursery, I look at their charts, talk with the nurses, get a sense as to whether or not there are any problems, and they go into the room to examine the baby and talk to the parents. My conversation takes a definite and well-considered approach. People worry about things they don't need to worry about, and my aim is to have them trust themselves, rely on their own instincts and intuitions. I'd like them to feel confident as parents. After examining the baby, I point out how perfect their baby is. I say, actually, the medical term is babius perfectus. The other one is cutis babius maximus. And I point out how much they fall in love once the baby's born. All they want to do is stare at the baby. And you could pick any part. You could look at the ear, the nose, the lips. It's the cutest ear or nose or lips you've ever seen. And they smile and laugh acknowledgingly. I then tell them, you guys are the exact perfect parents for this baby. You can't mess it up. To help put this idea into perspective, I point out to them, in the plant world, plants have billions of seeds because only a fraction take root. Animals have multiple litters because only a couple make it. We get one. We do okay. Before the advent of modern medicine and all the advice that comes with it, and before the first pediatrician graduated from medical school, we were doing quite well as a society. We weren't disappearing or fading away. Trust yourselves, trust each other, and you'll also discover that common sense goes a very long way. If you have any questions or concerns, call us. There's always someone who's on call. I have one tip for you, and it's probably my most important tip. Ignore anyone who gives you advice you didn't ask for. Treat them like telemarketers who are calling you to tell you how to invest your money. If it's grandparents, then the best line is they don't do that anymore. It's wonderful because they can't argue with you. There's no they that's there. And if you say it enough times, they'll realize, oh, I guess things are different. And they really are. I then go on and talk about some things physically about babies that are different, and some things that babies do, such as sneeze and have hiccups, that are also different. So when these occur, they won't worry about them. With moms who are nursing, I talk in the same way, thinking about the advice they get and the worries others put on them. One of these are myths around what's okay to eat and what's not. I point out that women in all parts of the world eat their local foods and their babies do fine. One of the great mysteries of the body is that when we ingest our food, we totally break it down into its most basic nature and then use that to rebuild it into body parts. So that out of the same milk the baby gets, it makes hard bones, clear tears, hair, and eyes. If the four of us in the room ate the same food every day, we wouldn't look like each other. The food I eat makes me look like me, and the food you eat makes you look like you. If we go jogging after a big salad, we don't sweat salad dressing. It's not there. For babies who'll be given formula, I spend my time reassuring those parents just as vigorously. I mention that if you tested any adults by any way possible, you couldn't tell who was formula fed and who was bottle fed. I also mention that I was bottle fed and I love my mother and I'm psychologically stable and physically sound. I see that my approach has value when I see the relief on the faces of the parents I speak to, when they laugh when I tell them various stories, and also with the thanks they have for me at the end of the visit. In this episode and in the next one, we'll see how thinking with heart and mind enhances all of our relationships. When we think with our hearts, we go beyond our own personal perspective and see the relationship through the eyes of the others. When we think with our minds, we use all of the facts that we have available to us. In this episode, we'll break our relationships down into four groups: the incidental relationships of everyday life, the relationships that we develop because of where we live, work, and go to school, the relationships that are our casual, not our closest relationships, and then our relationships with our best friends. In the next episode, we'll talk about our relationships with our partners, with our spouses, with our children, and with our parents. The incidental relationships are those with people I don't see regularly. Whether the wait person at the restaurant, the clerk at the store, or the secretary at my car mechanics, my relationship with them is generally through the services they provide. If I take the time and appreciate they're there to serve me, my response will be gratefulness, and treating them kindly and appreciatively will result. Another bit of reflection will point out how commonly this doesn't happen. If I take a different tack, there's possibilities in the relationship for both of us. It doesn't mean we have to fix anyone, and it doesn't mean we have to be perfect all the time. The other day I went to a little breakfast place. I mentioned to the cook at the end how good the food was. I don't know how many people say that. I also had an interesting experience recently. There was nothing on my mind. It was about 10 or 11 o'clock at night. I went to get gas. I needed change for a $20 bill. And I walked inside the gas station, and there was one woman who was behind the counter. She looked harried and hassled. I asked her for the change, and I said, "How's it going?" And she just said, "Oh, I've had such a horrible night, I was about to quit." Said one guy came in and was screaming that the pumps were too slow and started cursing at me. I have Crohn's disease and had to go to the bathroom a lot. And then somebody else started cursing at me because we didn't have mustard. She gave me the change. I said, "Thanks, hang in there. Don't let him get you." And I could see that just through that little interaction, she felt better. Somehow my words helped to diffuse her pent-up frustration. A frustration that was so intense that she even told a complete stranger about her medical problems. It didn't take any extra bit of time. I wasn't thinking about it. I was just there as another human being and just said, "How are you?" When I left, I somehow felt better that this little interaction helped her in whatever small way. In the last episode, we reviewed how when we touch other people with our hearts, we feel better. Not only do they feel better, we connect as people, and as we do that, love and compassion pass from one of us to the other. Love is healing and strengthening. The value in thinking through relationships with heart and mind holds in our situational relationships, those with our neighbors, with the people at our workplace, and with the people who go to school with us. In these relationships, we can decide on what kind of neighbor, what kind of coworker, what kind of classmate we want to be. And we get there by thinking about what we would like to have in a neighbor, coworker, or classmate. This decision comes from our own insights and ideas. Once we set this idea, we can work on being that. At the workplace, for example, we might note that the qualities we wish to aspire to are to be a hard worker, to be friendly, to be responsible, to be someone who's interested in the well-being of coworkers. Our challenge is to not only be the way we wish to be, but to also figure out how do we work in situations when the people we work with don't have the same aspirations. There will be people who work with us and for us who are easier and some who are more difficult. We can stay in our zone and not change because of that. We might decide that if there's a group that's very gossipy and not very nice to be with at lunchtime, we can figure out a different way to spend our lunchtime. Some situations will be easier than others. Some we might need to involve HR. Some we might decide that the situation is so untenable we don't want to be there. But we can stay in our zone in all of those. We can make the office work well. And when we do that, we'll enjoy going to the office. And people will enjoy working with us and for us. We win. Casual relationships are the relationships that go a little bit further, but they're not with our closest friends. Here, the biggest problems and challenges are our expectations. These can lead to disappointment and can also damage our sense of well-being. I had a small apartment when I was living in Manhattan, and I had a neighbor, Randa, who was very sweet. We were around the same age. We were both in our early 20s. And while we liked each other, we were very different. We were a bit more than neighbors. We visited each other. But still, it was casual. It was based on our living situation. We weren't really close friends. If she had a party and didn't invite me, I could imagine myself feeling left out, feeling hurt by that. But if I looked at the reality of our relationship, it wasn't one of being friends. It would take some work for me to realize that, because I could easily think, here it is, she had a party. She knows I'm not doing anything. Why didn't she think of inviting me? And the reason she didn't is that wasn't the nature of our relationship. We had a casual relationship, not a close relationship. A different way that occurred to me was when I was living in the city, there was a friend who was a casual relationship. And one day I mentioned to her that I had gone to the Metropolitan Museum of Art. And she looked surprised and said, how come you didn't invite me? I didn't invite her because it didn't occur to me. I was going to the museum. I wasn't thinking of it in a social setting. I could see that that would hurt her if she thought about me slighting her. We can feel hurt in a way that we don't necessarily need to do to ourselves. And we sometimes need to heal that little bit with both heart and mind. It can even happen on social media. I recently followed some posts by friends who were casual friends about a trip they had taken, and I felt a little hurt thinking, why didn't they tell me about the trip instead of me finding out about it online? And then I realized that wasn't the nature of our relationship. It's not uncommon that we take a negative attitude towards ourselves when doing that is really not justified. The work of thinking with heart and mind is to appreciate what happened and to also heal whatever inner hurts are there and walk away appreciating the nature of the relationship we have and fully enjoying it for what it is and as it is. Thinking with heart and mind can also be of service in our closest relationships, those relationships where we just click and fully enjoy each other's company. I experienced the first of these when I was quite young. Eric Jacobs lived next door to me when I went to kindergarten. We just loved being with each other. Everything we did together was fun. We'd do silly kid things and have a great time. We, for example, lived next door to each other. When we walked into our front door, in my apartment, there was a hall closet on the left, and in his apartment, it was on the right. We discovered that if we climbed past the coats and stepped over the boots and tapped on the inside wall, we could signal the other one that we were ready for school. This despite being 2 feet away from the front door, where we could have just gone out and knocked on the other's door. Eric moved away in third grade. My parents took me to see him once, and that was the last time I ever saw or spoke to Eric. We lived in an apartment complex, and there were many, many kids around. There were kids that I played with in my building, across the street, and we would gather in numbers as we walked to school. At school, I had lots of friends. But still, there was no one in all these relationships that was like Eric. I knew it wasn't the same, and I also knew I just had to do my best. Eric's leaving didn't cause a downward psychological spiral. I just saw it as something I had to accept and deal with. I had a natural interest in people, and I used this time to understand and to learn what it takes to be a friend. It might sound unusual for a young child to be thinking this way, but that's who I was and that's what I did. I also spent a lot of time alone. My parents weren't aware of what was going on for me, and so I didn't have the extra pressure of trying to make myself strong in front of them. I figured out how to be good company to myself, and I made up games around the house that I played when I was alone. One was a bowling game where I used my sister's hair curlers as pins. This experience taught me how to be independent and gave me the ability to do many things later in my life, including leaving the comforts of my world to go to medical school. I didn't have another really close friend until college. The point that I want to make here is that whether or not I had a best friend had nothing to do with my own qualities and characteristics. Nothing changed in me from the time Eric moved until I met another very close friend in college. I didn't change. Having a close friend isn't because of what we do and what we don't do. Somehow it's what life brings to us. We can, however, use the time if we don't have a close friend to build on who we are. We can become more understanding of what works in relationships, and we can also develop our own hobbies and interests. We become stronger in ourselves, and that will help us to have richer and more rewarding relationships and a life that we enjoy more, whether or not we have a close friend. I consider myself extremely fortunate in that there are several people I consider to be very close friends. None of them live near me. Just knowing that they're out there is enough. We speak only occasionally, and I see them even less frequently. Still, this is a great treasure. We can add another aspect to our relationships with our closest friends, and we can do this with all of our interactions by, again, thinking with heart and mind. Before getting together, if we get quiet for a minute, and I'll close my eyes and ask love to join me, and think about if in the upcoming get-together there's anything that we should talk about, either something to bring up from my own experience or something in their life that's worth asking about. Thinking about our relationships in the way described could possibly be seen as being contrived and making us a bit stiff. In fact, however, it's really about freeing ourselves up to be ourselves. We can see that by thinking about our creative activities. Whatever we do in the way of a creative task, whether it's playing a sport or a musical instrument, we practice so we can let go and be fully present while playing. It's the same with our relationships. Thinking through them with heart and mind allows us to be fully present, fully engaged, and in the moment. I developed the podcast to highlight the ideas and benefits of thinking with heart and mind. To help interested listeners incorporate these ideas into their lives, I also created exercises for each of the episodes. For this episode, there is one single exercise. Consider the relationships we discussed in this episode. The incidental ones, the situational ones that have to do with where we live, work, and go to school, the ones that are our casual relationships, and the ones that are those with our closest friends. Think about the idea that thinking with heart and mind can help enhance these relationships. Does this seem like a reasonable and sound approach to you? The second part of the exercise is to think about how your relationships would change if you considered them with your heart and with your mind. This exercise is included in the show notes of this episode, which can be found wherever you listen to podcasts or at the homepage for this podcast. The homepage for this podcast is ronschneebaummd.com. It can also be found by searching for onbeinghappier.com. Besides the show notes, the website also has a picture with the words Thinking Through Relationships with Heart and Mind. It comes in a large size and a small size. These can be downloaded to your tablets, laptops, or phones and used as a screensaver or wallpaper. I find that having the words in front of me of something that I'm working on is a helpful reminder for me to think about the topic. If you have any questions about this episode, email me at ron@onbeinghappier.com. Write questions in the subject line. If you have any comments about this episode, past episodes, or thoughts on future episodes, email me and write comments in the subject line. If you'd like to receive a newsletter, which I will get to one of these days, write newsletter in the subject line. I try to produce these podcasts every 2 weeks, but it usually takes much longer. With a full-time job and doing every aspect of the podcast, including the editing, I get them out as fast as I can. During the time in between episodes, think about the topic. The goal is to make these ideas part of your life, not just interesting thoughts. If you are streaming podcasts, instead of going from one episode to another, also spend some time thinking about the content of these episodes. I do this podcast without reaching out for any kind of financial contribution. I don't accept advertising, and I don't accept any kind of financial support. This is my gift, my way of giving back for all that I've learned in life. If you find value in this, or if you think others might find value in this, there is something you can do. Share it. Share it with friends, share it with colleagues, share it with spiritual advisors, with ministers, with therapists, with teachers, with family members, share with anyone who you think would be interested in these ideas. Because of your sharing, and only because of your sharing, this podcast is heard across the United States and worldwide. I'd like to take a moment to say hello to our listeners in Belize, in Latvia, in Greece, in India, and in Japan. Throughout the world, there are listeners listening to this podcast, and I welcome you. Subscribe to it so when a new episode gets downloaded, you'll be aware of it, and also rate it and review it. That's how some people come to the podcast. I enjoy spending our time together. Until the next time, I wish you all the very best. Be well, Ron.